Chapter 10. Mr. Cadence will see you now. Mo Trattle had lost a partner but gained plenty, though not for herself, for her boss. No, that wasn't Henry Sapridge. He was just another of the top dog's employees. He'd get a cut, Mo was getting a cut, but the bulk was up for grabs to the right bidder with the proceeds going to their employer. Olivette Mo Trattle nodded at the secretary as she passed his desk on her way to the thick glass door, which slid back almost noiselessly when she drew near. She didn't like being the envoy in situations like this, but she couldn't dump the job on Flo anymore. She'd miss her partner of the past 2 years, but mistakes are mistakes, no pity needed.
"Come in, Miss Trattle."
Siglio Cadence had a commanding voice. In fact, he sounded like he had a throat mic. Not about to be intimidated by the way it permeated the executive's office, she quickly thanked him in an equally potent voice, but it didn't carry like his. She had a lot of open space to cross to get to where he stood, over at his wall of polarised windows staring out at the Houston skyline. She stopped a couple of yards shy of him.
"So I hear you intercepted my funding," he said. "Not the best foot to set off upon, I'd say. But I can hardly begrudge you your opportunistic nature from higher moral ground. Would you like to have a seat?"
He gestured toward the pair of desk chairs that sat opposite his own over at the office's kidney-shaped desk.
"I'm good to stand if you are," Mo said. "I assumed this matter wouldn't take long." "No, it shouldn't," Cadence said. Even up close, that voice sounded too resonant. "As you are offering us what we are seeking, which amounts to, well, a large amount of project funding, you'll understand that I'm highly curious as to your terms."
"My employer wants in," Mo said bluntly.
"In?"
Cadence seemed surprised but not shocked. The surprise quickly faded and he chuckled, and even that resonated in the spacious but not ostentatious office.
"Your employer wants to be part of the project? But how would he even know about it?"
"Let's say you have a mutual friend," Mo said, and the knowing little smirk went from his face to hers as she saw that he was genuinely caught at least somewhat off guard.
"You're saying..."
"I'm saying he gets calls on phones that don't work too." The guess paid off, it seemed. Cadence could have been faking it, but only if he were one hell of an actor.
"That's remarkable," he said, composing himself quickly. "Of course, it's equally unprecedented and noteworthy that as you were apparently directed here to me by our mutual friend, I was not informed that new partnerships were in the offing. So these calls..." "They told him that the proceeds of the recovered materials were to go to this office. But I was to admit your employer as a new... partner?"
"That's how he explained it to me, Mr. Cadence.
My employer isn't seeking anything as bold as an equal partnership or a seat at your executive boardroom table. He just wants access to what you're doing. And he's been told by those... phone calls that you will grant him that." "Again, strange that I wasn't given that particular update.
Mr. Leviak... my employer's phone contact, if you will, said to explain that you'll be contacted again when our agreement is complete here." Cadence fell thoughtfully silent, his formidable form turning slowly back so that he could stare out of the windows again. He didn't have his back to Mo, just a shoulder.
"My contact has a different name," he said. "One wonders how many there are. Over there..."
Mo didn't really appreciate his pensive approach. She wanted the deal done.
"I don't even like to think about who or what they are," she said. "I understand your hesitation because I realise the deal was not communicated to you in advance of my visit." "The thieves," Cadence said,
eyes focused on the only skyscraper in the city taller than the one from which he was viewing it.
"I certainly hope there are no loose ends there."
Mo hesitated. Cadence turned toward her.
"You still haven't found him?"
"You wanted the chest brought here right away. My partner is dead. I did the best I could. When we're done here, I'm off to track him down and snip that last loose end.
cut that final thread.
I see. Well.
Cadence strolled off, his unyieldingly stiff posture evident in every unhurried stride. He made a short circle in the wide open area between the windows and the entry doors, staring at nothing in particular as he went.
I suppose I'll have to accept your word about the explanatory call, at least for now.
He turned and looked her in the eyes from about 15 feet away.
Very well. Your employer will have access to the project. But it must be understood that only that individual be extended such privilege.
I'm sure that will be understood and agreed to, Mr. Cadence. The phone rang. Not the one on Cadence's desk, which was hooked up to many actual systems around the world. No, it was the old chocolate brown wall phone he'd found ringing in his estate's four-car garage almost a year earlier. There'd been a smashed-in window, too. Some deranged reverse thief had broken into his garage, taken nothing and left that 70s relic front and centre on the workbench. Cadence looked over at his desk. He looked back to Mo. He wasn't that far from the desk, so he went over to it and drew open the bottom right drawer. She saw him lift the handset and bass and realised what was happening. There were no cords attached to it. He answered it.
Yes.
He listened. She watched.
Very good, then, he said. A moment, please.
He set the phone down on his desk and opened the top drawer on the same side. He spoke so as to momentarily deflect her attention from what he'd just withdrawn.
Your employer and I now have an agreement,
he said, watching her eyes grow wide as she saw the automatic he was pointing at her.
Unfortunately for you, this is part of it.
He fired. The bullet hit her just below the ribs on the right side. She fell back, staring in disbelief, her fingers having gotten just shy of allowing her to brandish her own concealed weapon, a dart hidden in her shirt sleeve cuff, the point coated with an extremely fast-acting poison.
That was a bad shot, Cadence said. I'm sorry.
She teetered and fell onto her back awkwardly. She quickly pushed up, trying to rise again, eyes growing wide as he came striding closer.
If you hold still, I'll do better. I usually have someone else to do this. My apologies again.
Her shock and vital fear morphed instantly into fiery rage. Forgetting her painful gut wound for a moment, she settled for rising to her knees and let fly with the dart. The thin shaft of the sleek little projectile streaked through the air, penetrated 3 expensive layers of clothing and sank into Cadence's flesh a few inches below his left shoulder. He looked down at the tiny feathered tip. He reached up with his free hand and removed the dart.
Interesting,
he said, raising it to eye level.
I assume that's poison on the tip.
Mo was setting herself to lunge at him. He should have been collapsing to the ground. No matter. She'd make sure he went horizontal one way or another. Or not. He fired without really looking, striking her in the upper left arm. Screaming, she fell onto her face, smashing her nose. She rolled over and stared up at him in helpless dread. Cadence licked the dart tip.
I don't recognise it. No matter, though. I can't really be poisoned anymore, you see.
Mo was pushing away, leaving broad smears of blood. But he was focused on the needle. After a few seconds, he looked up and saw her.
Oh, I must apologise again.
He chuckled cruelly.
I have to admit, I didn't even aim that time. You were just... Well, let's do this right, shall we?
I'll come back just like they are,
Mo said through gritted teeth as Cadence moved in close and drew a bead on her forehead.
And I'll do worse than this to you. I'll take my...
He shot her in the face. She flew back, blood spattering his leather couch. Mo jerked twice and fell still. Cadence came right up to her and stared down into her already unseeing eyes.
Nothing personal, he said. Your employer concurred that there was no room for sloppiness, so I'll be sending my own to cut that loose thread you left. Oh, and as for coming back... Well, if you somehow manage that little trick, don't forget who will be making your new body.
Cadence went back over to his desk and picked up the phone.
It's so cliché, killing the messenger, he said into the mouthpiece. Just be certain that the person who sent it gets the message. I'll be handling the runaway thief they let slip at this end. I've seen enough of their system to limit our arrangement to that single article. If you want this done right, no part of it should feature a hodgepodge alliance of thugs and oddities traders. My people have the skills, and now that we have what we need, or will soon as the chest arrives, we can take it all completely from here.
He listened for about 30 seconds, as Liam Leviak, his otherworldly sponsor of sorts, made sure that Cadence knew who was actually calling the shots.
No, there's no need for a demonstration, he said. I look forward to seeing our endeavour blossom and reach its utmost potential. A new day for the world.
The seemingly impossible call completed quickly. Cadence pondered Leviak's words. He'd so wanted to ask exactly how many others on the other side of life were involved in the grand scheme, but even Cadence couldn't risk pushing it. Leviak only said what he wanted Cadence to hear, and he wasn't very receptive to questioning. Millions were on the way into Cadence's secret coffers, courtesy of an unearthed, or rather untreed, frontier coffer nearly 200 years old. The sturdy wooden chest was indeed packed full of gold melts, and would yield enough to allow Cadence to augment the already world-changing tech he'd acquired since the utterly strange break-in phone deposit anti-heist. The bizarre trail of phone calls had resulted in 3 casualties and Sal Manx on the run, targeted for loose-end tying by Cadence himself. Teak Brethren was pleased. He'd done his part, gotten the treasure to a player. Yveli wanted to be alive again. So did Brethren. He'd gotten shorted the first time around. Had he still had his gang with him when he'd met his demise, it might not have happened. But some bean farmer and an old gunslinger had taken the rest out, leaving him to eventually go off to his bitter end without his cronies, and without the loot. But that hardly mattered any more. Yveli had plans, and Brethren was in them. Chances had just become very good that they'd both be back among the living, maybe quite soon. Henry Sapridge's ultimate fate wasn't quite so promising. The sensor pad under the breezeway mat didn't go off if a dog trotted onto it. That is, unless the dog weighed at least 80 pounds. So when Sapridge got the alarm light notice, he looked up expecting to see a person standing in the doorway. But there was a problem. The monitor was out. He checked his equipment. The camera was on, the feed sending, his monitor receiving. But he wasn't seeing anything at all. The lens was giving him nothing but lightless pixels. He sat up, set down the stack of 20s he'd been counting, took the gun out of the drawer, got to his feet, and went over to peer through the usual gap in his back office doorway. Sapridge made his way quietly across the room, staying low, studying that old wooden door with the modern lock. He moved up to the door and peered out through the peephole. Nobody there. But someone had left a pillow-sized cardboard box atop the mat. Had it not been an hour after closing, he might have just assumed it to be a delivery. But why was the alarm saying it weighed 80 pounds? The box would have had to have been filled with lead. And that wouldn't explain the monitor cam being out of commission. He couldn't get a look at the device without opening the door. Somebody walked past the breezeway. A man, moving quickly and out of sight before Sapridge could get a look at him beyond noticing his gender and stiff pace. If that package was intended to tease Sapridge into opening the door, he decided, it wasn't going to do its job. Nobody dropped stuff off on his door. That wasn't how he worked. However, if something did end up virtually in his lap, and he didn't know what it was, but knew that gold was almost as heavy as lead, he didn't necessarily want anyone else to run off with it. This is what he was thinking after nearly 10 minutes of staring at it. So when a kid with a drawn-down hoodie darted in right about then, crouching and seizing the box, he nearly choked on his bubblegum. The kid appeared to nearly jerk his skinny arms out of their socket when the box weight proved much more of a challenge than he'd reasonably expected. But after recovering quickly, he set about trying to lift it again. Failing that, he hefted it up on one edge and dragged it out of sight around the corner. Sapridge could only take it for about 10 seconds. He unlocked the door and drew it open. He'd long ago removed the storm door, so his path was clear. Hearing scraping sounds growing successively fainter, he edged up to the outside corner of the breezeway and leaned out. The kid wasn't trying to get away. He'd been standing just around the corner, making dragging sounds with the edge of the box as he got his gun set in his hand. He let go of the box, the lid fell open, revealing thick, dark grey plates. Lead. The kid rose, a grim scowl hovering beneath hollow eyes. Sal Manx took aim.